Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
President Trump yesterday congratulated his daughter Tiffany on Twitter for graduating from law school, which is actually kind of a sweet way to say, I don't have your number.
Recorded from locations that are not 30 Rockefeller Plaza, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. On today's show, Seth chats with actor, comedian, and writer Patton Oswalt. But first, a closer look.
The president and his political allies are once again trying to subvert the 2020 election, sue it the 2020 convertible, by using the levers of power to target political opponents and disrupt the voting process itself. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Donald Trump is a deranged man. We've been over this. You guys know the deal. If this show was a book, that would be the subtitle. His brain is likely the gelatinous texture and consistency of pumpkin pie filling, and there's no way to treat a brain ailment like that, though I guess we're gonna find out if hydroxychloroquine helps. Trump is a deeply paranoid guy who sees enemies and shadowy plots everywhere he looks, and he encourages others to see those same conspiracies. On Tuesday, for example, he met with farmers and told a potato farmer from Virginia that the state government was somehow trying to take away the Second Amendment.
We're going after Virginia with your crazy governor. We're going after Virginia. They want to take your Second Amendment away. You know that, right? You have nobody guarding your potatoes.
Now, I've been in quarantine for 2 months with two kids, and I still haven't said anything that crazy. You know, that farmer was like, oh, damn, am I supposed to be guarding my potatoes right now? You know what's guarding your potatoes? The fact that they cost about 12 cents a pound and grow underground. Of course, Trump probably thinks potatoes grow in bags on supermarket shelves. I'm just kidding. He's never been to a supermarket. But that's how Trump's mind works. He sees deranged conspiracies everywhere. Take voting. We like to think of it as perhaps the single most sacred principle underpinning our democracy. Voting is a universal right, not a privilege. Even the Republican Party, which has for decades committed itself to suppressing the votes of marginalized people through voter ID laws and gerrymandering, knows enough to at least pay lip service to that idea. But on Wednesday, as is his wont, Trump just blurted out the truth during an incoherent rant on mail-in voting. He sees voting as an honor, not a right.
I think just common sense would tell you that it's massive manipulation can take place. Massive. You have cases of fraudulent ballots where they actually print them and they give them to people to sign. Maybe the same person signs them with different writing, different pens. I don't know. There's a lot of things can happen. Now, if you can, you should go and vote. Voting is an honor. It shouldn't be something where they send you a pile of stuff and you send it back.
They send you a pile of stuff and you send it back? That's mail. That's how the mail works. And then you go to a restaurant, say chicken to a stranger who you've never met. And the next thing you know, they bring it to her on a plate. It makes no sense. You know, voter fraud is virtually non-existent in this country. The most famous recent example was a voter fraud scheme concocted by a Republican to cheat in a congressional election in North Carolina in 2018, which invalidated the election and resulted in a redo. Now, you might be wondering if Democratic voter fraud is supposedly so widespread, as Republicans claim, why do we only know about voter fraud cases involving Republicans? MSNBC asked the then executive director of the North Carolina GOP that question, and he did not have a particularly good answer.
We constantly are hearing Republicans say that Democrats are engaged in voter fraud. There's almost never any evidence of that. And right here, you're holding a board that has at least 22 cases of voter fraud in the state of North Carolina executed by Republicans in one district.
In one congressional district, in one election.
So 22 cases of voter fraud by a Republican. Where are the Democratic cases of voter fraud?
Well, I'm not keeping score of that.
Well, looks like you caught me with my britches down, but as you have insulted my honor, I have no recourse but to challenge you to a duel tomorrow morning in the potato field. And yet, yesterday, Trump threatened on Twitter to unilaterally withhold funding from the states of Michigan and Nevada simply for mailing out applications for absentee ballots, which is perfectly legal and which states with Democratic and Republican governors have done for years, just 5 months. After he got impeached for threatening to withhold funding from Ukraine unless they interfered in the election, and 2 months after he said governors who want help from the federal government have to treat him well, he just keeps using the same move over and over. It's only a matter of time before he threatens to withhold funding from the post office unless they promise to look at every ballot and dump the ones marked for Biden and the shredder he uses for his tax returns. It comes with an extra large bin. And the Republican Party is fully in lockstep behind Trump. In the middle of a pandemic that has killed more than 90,000 Americans and created the economy, they're transforming the Senate into an arm of the president's campaign. The Senate Judiciary Committee, led by Lindsey Graham, is moving forward with an investigation of the origins of the Russia probe in an effort to target Obama administration officials. And the Senate Homeland Security and Governmental Affairs Committee, led by Ron Johnson, voted to subpoena documents as part of an investigation of Hunter Biden. The same investigation Trump got impeached for, and Republicans are fine with all of it. You might get a little grumble, you know, from Mitt Romney, and Susan Collins might form a committee to look into the possibility of furrowing her brow, but otherwise, the GOP is down with all of it. They're like bank robbers who get caught planning a heist and then say, should we do it anyway? Republicans are just as paranoid and conspiratorial as Trump. He didn't come out of nowhere. He fits perfectly in the GOP. They've concocted an insane fantasy in which Obama spied on Trump by secretly monitoring suspicious calls by Michael Flynn and not telling Trump about it, as Johnson claimed Tuesday on Fox News.
So if that were the case, that they were genuinely concerned that there was some compromise or something going on that was nefarious on those phone calls, why would they have not told the incoming president of the United States?
Because it was a corrupt transition process. No, that's exactly what they should have done.
They did. This isn't some secret. Obama warned then-President-elect Trump about Flynn during a meeting in the Oval Office 2 days after the election. I mean, do you remember that incredibly bizarre meeting where Trump sat stone-faced next to Obama like a terrified seventh grader who just got called into the principal's office? These guys have concocted a bunch of insane conspiracy theories, and now they're using the levers of government to suppress votes and drum up politically motivated investigation, and they're doing that because they're losing. Polls show Americans broadly dissatisfied with Trump's handling of the pandemic, and Biden consistently ahead of Trump. And when a Democrat is ahead of Trump in the polls, it's all over, baby! The president has badly mishandled a massive cataclysm that has left nearly 100,000 Americans dead in the economy in tatters, yet on Wednesday, he insisted he'd actually handled the situation perfectly.
Mr. President, with 4% of the world's population and 30% of the outbreak, what would you have done differently facing this crisis?
Well, nothing.
Are you sure? You don't want to think about it for maybe another second? You don't think you would have changed anything? Like, you know, maybe you shouldn't have said coronavirus would disappear like a miracle, that it was like the flu, or that you could cure it by chomping Tide to-go sticks and shining a heat lamp up your ass? Okay. In reality, of course, there are lots of things we could have been doing and should be doing now to suppress the outbreak. New data reported by the New York Times last night suggested that lockdown delays cost at least 36,000 lives. Instead, Trump has been obsessed with pushing hydroxychloroquine as an unproven miracle cure, despite the fact that his own FDA warns against taking it. And now, after claiming out of nowhere that he himself was taking hydroxychloroquine, Trump announced on Wednesday that he was about to stop.
Come on, we're done.
think the regimen finishes in a day or two. Yeah. About a, I think it's a 2 days.
So Trump took an unproven drug for no reason and decided arbitrarily that the regimen finishes in a day or two.
Yeah, I only have 2 days left because last I checked, there were just the two pills left in the dispenser. You better not be holding out on me, Mickey.
The president is pushing dangerous miracle cures when there are actually lots of things, like testing, contact tracing, and isolation, we could be doing to save lives. In fact, this week has provided a fairly stark contrast between things that do work and things that don't work in combating the coronavirus pandemic, and which of those Trump has chosen to embrace. For example, it was reported this week that experiments by a team in Hong Kong found that the coronavirus transmission rate via respiratory droplets or airborne particles dropped by as much as 75% when surgical masks were used. Now, that's potentially huge news. However, there is one big caveat to this story. The study used hamsters in two cages, one group of hamsters infected with COVID-19 and the other healthy. Now, if you're wondering how one group of hamsters got infected, they were the hamsters who violated stay-at-home orders to get haircuts. You guys want to know something fun? You see, whatever that picture is, I haven't seen it yet. You're seeing it before I do. We just write hamster with a super style haircut, and then a member of our incredible graphics team working from their apartment makes it, and then I pretend to look at it like this, and I'm like... But I'm just staring at the ceiling of my attic. I miss being at work, guys. I'm over this reacquainting funk. Also, the study just used mask barriers in the cages. They didn't actually make the hamsters wear masks, but I really wish they had because that would mean, you know, it was actually someone's job to make tiny hamster-sized face masks. And then from that, we could extrapolate that they also make hamster-sized accessories like gloves, you know, briefcases, tank tops, baseball helmets, and of course, tiny cages for the pet hamsters, tiny pet hamsters. Again, I have no idea what any of those graphics are gonna look like. But I assume they're fun. I hope you enjoyed them. So this finding is obviously preliminary and has some caveats, but it's consistent with what we know about countries that have adopted widespread mask wearing along with other techniques like contact tracing. By and large, they've had a lot more success containing the pandemic than we have. Widespread mask wearing along with testing, contact tracing, and isolation is one of a few simple measures that could very possibly help us get back to some semblance of normalcy, and yet conservatives have decided to turn it into yet another dumb culture war issue. Some have even theorized that it's a media conspiracy to keep people permanently afraid.
Rush Limbaugh made a great point, as he always does, on the radio the other day, and he said the virus itself, as it weakens and states start reopening, the media that have been selling this panic for weeks and weeks and weeks, they have fewer images to sell their hysteria to justify continued lockdowns. But the masks, well, they're kind of a constant reminder. You see the masks and you think you're not safe. You are not back to normal, not even close.
Okay, first of all, anytime someone says Rush Limbaugh made a great point the other day, that's your cue to exit the conversation. That's usually the point on Thanksgiving where you excuse yourself, go to the bathroom and take a hit off your vape pen, or alternatively, you look for your vape pen, realize you forgot it, and frantically search the medicine cabinet for something that'll get you high. Amoxicillin. I had a potato with it. Second, you think people need to see masks to be reminded that things are bad? I assure you, no one needs to be reminded. We can't go to the gym, our mail is soaked in so much Lysol, we can barely read the return address, and we've been locked in our houses with our kids for 3 months. I'm so desperate to keep my children entertained, I spent all night making wasp t-shirts, and then we did not one, not two, but three takes. Now they want to know when their next gig is. My younger one keeps telling me he has an agent now, and given how crazy is, I honestly can't tell if he's joking or not. The point is, mask wearing isn't some liberal media conspiracy. There's evidence to suggest it works. Lots of other countries do it, and the vast majority of Americans agree with it. A new poll out on Wednesday found that 62% of Americans say that deciding to wear a face mask is more of a matter of public health than a matter of personal choice. About two-thirds say they always or mostly wear a face mask or other covering when they're in public and near other people, and 69% say that it's a sign of respectfulness to wear a face mask when in public and near other people. And they're right. It's just common decency. If you know that coughing or breathing on someone could get them sick, you cover your mouth, unless you're Trump, in which case you force everyone to cluster together next to you in a tiny briefing room and repeatedly grab the microphone like the MC at an open mic night.
Is anyone here? Is anyone here from out of town? You, sir, in the front room. Front row right there. Yeah, where are you from? I know it's you, Fauci. I know it's you. Okay, can you tell me where you're from so I can... So I can burn you a couple times, Fauci. Hey, we only roast the ones we love, and I love you, Fauci. You're my best friend.
And despite the fact that the CDC recommends it and most Americans agree with it, Trump again refused to wear a mask today while touring a Ford plant in Michigan after Ford had initially said they would require one. Trump and Vice President Mike Pence have repeatedly refused to wear masks in settings where they were required or where everyone around them was wearing one. Put aside the fact that Trump and Pence are ignoring their own government's guidelines on mask wearing or the stupid conservative culture war over masks, why do you guys have to be such dicks about everything? Just be polite. If you go over to someone's house and they ask you to take your shoes off, you take your shoes off, and then you quietly make a mental note that you're not going to any more of Sharon's game nights. You don't make a big show of leaving them on and tracking mud everywhere, or in Trump's case, toilet paper. There are simple, straightforward things we could have done and could be doing now to suppress the outbreak and safely get back to some semblance of normalcy. Instead, the president and his allies are spending their time trying to subvert the 2020 election. They're concocting wild fantasies about Obama spying or Democrats committing voter fraud. None of that has any basis in reality. Soon, Trump's going to start telling people that if he doesn't get reelected,
you'll have nobody guarding your potatoes.
This has been a looser lock.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than Luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
Our guest is an Emmy Award-winning comedian you know from The King of Queens, Ratatouille, and AP Bio. His latest comedy special, I Love Everything, is available on Netflix now. Here's my conversation with our friend, Patton Oswalt.
Patton, it is always so lovely to see you. How are you?
Seth, I'm good considering ... I think that's yes. The greeting now. Yeah.
Are you, what room are you in right now?
I kind of jury-rigged a screening room in this house when I moved in. It's just a row of chairs and then a big TV, but it's not, like, I like to pretend this is like a big screening room, but it's kind of not, but whatever. And whose attic are you hiding out in right now? What is this room?
This is our attic, and today we just added my wife, after a long time, added some lilacs, and it's they're very fragrant, and it's nice.
Well, I'll look make sure that your neck doesn't start swelling up during the interview in case you're.
Thank you. Yeah. You mentioned I mentioned your screening room. You have a 10-year-old daughter. And you wrote an entire book I read about how much you love film and love going to see movies. Are you using this time to introduce movies you love to her?
I'm trying to. You know, it's interesting. I don't want to be the equivalent of the sports dad with my movies and nerdy stuff. I don't want to, like, you're going to read all of the Avengers. Like, she watched stuff that she likes. So I remember very clearly showing her Star Wars when she was 8. And which was the year that I saw it, that's how old I was. And her reaction was, like, it's okay. Yeah. But then I showed her the movie Groundhog Day and she loved it. And especially now, because Groundhog Day is a very, very helpful movie for people that are in quarantine and stuck with the same routine every day. How do you make it have meaning? How do you make it wonderful? Like that kind of thing. I highly recommend watching Groundhog Day during quarantine shut-in.
An excellent, excellent piece of advice. I want to talk about the sort of perfect arrival of your stand-up special. I think we're living through a time where if somebody had filmed an hour of comedy, it one, it brings you joy to watch. It two, helps remind us of a time where we collectively enjoyed that sort of thing in an audience. Yeah. You must, you know, obviously not the circumstances you would wish for, but do you feel happy that people are getting a chance to watch it now?
Yeah, it's very bittersweet. I'm very, very happy that I have a new hour of stuff and that this new hour of stuff is especially goofy and silly compared to my last one. You know, the last one went very dark and very deep. I was dealing with some very kind of crucial and hard personal issues. And this is more like an embracing of life again. So I'm happy that this nice, fun, goofy thing is out. But like you said, I wish it wasn't out under these circumstances.
It is, you know, this is called, this special is called I Love Everything. You did compare it to your last one, which was called Annihilation. It is nice that in a time where I think we all have a lot to be depressed about, this is a really upbeat, positive special.
Well, the title comes from that kind of, and I'm sure you've experienced this too, as you get older, when I say I love everything, there's stuff that still annoys me and that I get angry at, but as you get older, you understand where things are coming from better. You know why maybe someone's being a jerk. You know why it's like, you know the background to things more, so it's hard to just flat out hate things because you're like, oh, this person must. So it's like hatred is such a luxury for youth.
This is, I think around 3 years to the day that you met your wife, and you talk about her in the special. You talk about a fight you had in the special. I certainly in my comedy have talked about my wife and family. How does she feel about the stories you tell about her in your act?
Well, she has such a great sense of humor about them. And because, you know, I am brutally honest, sometimes to a fault, about when I'm wrong or when a situation is awkward or weird. So I'm never trying to ever paint myself as the cool, crazy hero, especially if I'm talking about a fight like I do in the special. I was absolutely in the wrong in this fight. It wasn't me. And especially it was one of those fights where the wronger I was, the deeper I would dug into my stupid position. And you've had those fights too, where you actually realize halfway through the fight, like, oh, I'm 100% wrong. And yeah. I can either just right now and go, oh, you know what, my bad. Or like I do, sometimes you panic and just double down and dig even deeper into your position that you know is indefensible, which to me is hilarious when people do that.
It's also the thing of when you fight and you try to then when you realize you're wrong, so you try to change the path of the fight to be about something so that they ultimately will forget the thing you were so wrong about.
Yes. And it gets back to the whole I love you everything, where when you watch, like, let's say a presidential press conference or, you know, his press person talking, yes, you're like, well, I've done that too, trying to change the subject. However, they shouldn't be doing my lame idiot tactics in running the country. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. That's still not good. I understand where it's coming from. You should not be doing that.
Right.
I should be doing it when I realize that I claimed that I didn't leave the bag of Doritos open, and then I realized halfway through, oh no, I went down late last night and I did, oh yeah, I did leave that out there. Now what do I, you know what I mean? Like,
right, we're never trying to say I've never done what you're doing. We're just trying to say you're doing it at the wrong time.
And you're doing it at a level you shouldn't be doing it at. So you shouldn't take that energy up to statecraft level. That's not good.
We're gonna be right back with more Patton right after this. So you and I were talking, we're back with Patton Oswalt. We were talking during the break about remote learning. I got a 2 and a 4-year-old. There's not a lot of it. How is your 10-year-old doing, and are you helpful?
Yeah, I mean, well, here's what's terrifying is she does remote learning. So there's social studies, there's English, there's art. And I'm always happy to hop in and help her out. And then when I see her coming at me with her math sheets, I cringe because it's become very clear to both me and my wife that our math knowledge kind of topped out in third grade and hers is at a fourth grade level. And there are literally, I just have this thing we download called the Tangy Math Pack, and I downloaded my own so I could do it and then check her answers. And I realized I don't know how to do these new things where it's called the bar method for solving. I don't know how this works, and I'm going to get this wrong. And I'm terrified that she's going to come to me and go, can we go over this? I'm like, I kind of don't know what this. So I'm trying to find like YouTube videos trying to figure out.
Yeah. I can't believe how ignorant I am that it never occurred to me that there would be a different way to teach people the same stuff.
Exactly. Well, it's what apparently that happened in the 60s with new math. But now the new math that you and I grew up on is old. And there's something called Singapore math. And there's something called the bar method. There's all these new methods that I have no idea. I don't know what to do.
It's good to look ahead and realize that's a frustration that's coming down the pike for me.
It is coming, so get ready. It's, oh boy.
I just want to say that you you hosted the Webby Awards on Tuesday night. I actually hosted that show a few years ago. It's a ton of fun. I, of course, did it live when there was an audience. I think this is the thing a lot of comedians are figuring out, like, how will this sort of virtual entertainment work? Did you still have a good time doing it?
I had a good time recording it. I mean, I hosted it 3 times live. And you're right. Gotcha. It is such a fun show. It's really goofy. It doesn't take itself seriously. And now I'm scrambling to, like, catch up with the technology that's needed. So there was a lot of things, there was a lot of text that needed to be read, and I had to keep, like, looking, because I couldn't figure out, like, teleprompter technology and proper lighting. So I did the best job I could, but I hope that historically people will look at the 2020 Webbies and go, this has a real post-apocalyptic wasteland feel to it, which might be a good, like, historical document for this is the time. But I hope if they ever ask me again, I will be a little more up to speed with, because it especially celebrates people that are doing amazing things on the web. So a lot of the speeches looked great, and then they cut back to Grandpa Oswald, and I don't see. Hello. Okay. Like, it's just this weird, like, multi-generational thing, you know?
Yeah. It is
a little weird.
It's so true that so much work is going to be time-stamped in a way that will make it very clear when anybody looks back, oh, that was during that.
I have gone down the saddest rabbit hole where I will go online to YouTube. I don't know if you're doing this too. People have posted videos for years now of huge, like, summer blockbuster, the big moments, and they will record the audience cheering for big moments.
Wow.
A guy recorded opening night of Avengers Endgame, all the big moments when Captain America goes Avengers Assemble, or when he picks up Thor's hammer, like, all those amazing, where the crowd is just, yeah, like, freaking out. And I'm watching all of these with this sad, not, like, remember people just out, like, cheering for stuff? Like, I'm watching all this, like, and I used to despise people in movies filming things. Now I thank God that people were there recording the audience, because it's like this age that's gone now. And and now there's, like, whole videos put together, like, best audience reactions of Deadpool, best audience reactions of, and I'm just watching all this stuff, and it's amazing.
What a funny thing that you're right, that I think we all wanted the movie-going experience to completely make us forget that we were watching it with other people, and now, of course, that's the thing you miss the most. Patton, it's always so lovely to talk to you. Stay safe and healthy, and we'll see you soon, hopefully in person.
Yes, hopefully in person. All right, man. Be safe.
Bye, Patton.
Late Night with Seth Meyers airs weeknights on NBC at 12:35, 11:35 Central. Original music on the Late Night podcast is by the HE Band. Don't forget to follow the handle Late Night Seth on social media and tell your friends to subscribe to the Late Night podcast wherever they get their podcasts.
Welcome to the small town of Chinook, where faith runs deep and secrets run deeper. In this new thriller, available exclusively on Wondery Plus, religion and crime collide when a gruesome murder rocks the isolated Montana community. Everyone is quick to point their fingers at a drug-addicted teenager, but local deputy Ruth Vogel isn't convinced. She suspects connections to a powerful religious group. Enter federal agent V.B. Loro, who has been investigating a local church for possible criminal activity. The pair form an unlikely partnership to catch the killer, unearthing secrets that leave Ruth torn between her duty to the law, her religious convictions, and her very own family. But something more sinister than murder is afoot, and someone is watching Ruth. With an all-star cast led by Emmy nominee Sanaa Lathan and Star Wars Kelly Marie Tran, Chinook is available exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.